Chapter 15, A Trip of Love. After my third trip to India, I was sure that nothing short of lightning searing the night sky with a message to return would send me back for quite some time. I had been home 4 months when I received word that Walter Cowan had passed away after having lived a year and a half following his apparent resurrection by Baba. Elsie, Walter's wife, informed me that Baba had written her stating his interest in coming to America, and that she was planning to go to Puttaparthi to make arrangements for such a trip. I felt that Elsie was playing a long shot, as this speculation had been going on for years. But after reading the letter Elsie had received from Baba, I decided it was the clearest sign yet that he was seriously considering a trip to this country. Then Elsie asked me to join her. I was thrown into a tremendous dilemma. I struggled back and forth, yes, no, and started asking for signs. I would look at chipmunks scurrying across the yard and say, okay, if he jumps into that hole, that means I'll go. If he doesn't, I'll stay. Sharon, who had put up with my antics for a year and a half, said she could accept my leaving even this fourth time if only there was some kind of sign indicating to both of us that I should go. She mentioned this to Elsie by phone on Sunday morning. Later that day, I was crawling around under the house fixing some plumbing. I was preparing for a shower afterwards when I noticed that the medallion Baba had materialized for me during my last trip was missing from the chain around my neck. My heart dropped, and my mind began to whirl as I tried to figure out where I might have lost it. It seemed peculiar to me that in all my activity over the past 6 months, now should be the first time for this to happen. But it would be just too far-fetched to consider it a sign. Scrambling around under the house had simply pulled the medallion off its chain, and it was down there somewhere in the dirt. Then, while putting on my Bermuda shorts, I was startled to find a little medal dangling from a thread in the hem of my pants leg. The small ring fastening the metal to the chain was open just enough to have allowed it to slide off and become entangled in the hem. The medal dangled playfully from my shorts, somehow reminding me of the sleight of hand a magician uses in pulling a coin from someone's ear. The impact made me laugh aloud. I had the eerie feeling that this had not been just an accidental occurrence after all. I had heard many similar stories about unusual circumstances concerning Baba's gifts. Still, I could hardly call this a true sign, although Sharon's resistance softened somewhat when I told her about it. Finally, however, the temptation of being able to participate in some way with the planning of a trip by Baba to America, no matter how unlikely its chances of occurring, became simply too great to resist. I knew I would be disappointed again. I knew the destruction of Samuel Sandweiss would resume once more in earnest. But I decided to go back. My loving, supportive family, having become accustomed to my frequent trips to India, saw me off with all the warmth one could possibly ask for. Away into the sky I flew, headed for Baba's feet. Coincidentally or not, the movie showing on the flight was Man of La Mancha. I chuckled watching Don Quixote fighting windmills and journeying after his dream. Just what would happen? Would I continue to feel that excruciating distance and lack of personal contact with Baba again on this trip? Or would my going with Elsie permit me the intimacy with him that I desired so fervently? As soon as we arrived at Prashanthi Nilayam, it was apparent to me that I would be seeing Baba in a new light. From the start, he was very attentive to Elsie. I know Baba has the same love for all of his devotees, even though at times he appears to be actually avoiding or ignoring them. But in his relationship with Elsie, I was able to see his love expressed in unmistakable fashion. As we approached the temple, Baba sent out a small plant as a gift to welcome to her. It was remarkable, about the size of a golf ball, with a short stem and round green petals, somewhat resembling a lotus. It had a marvelous fragrance, a concoction of the smells of all kinds of fruits, flowers, and perfumes, the likes of which I had never before experienced. The aroma of this plant set the mood for the remainder of the trip. Although unable to see Baba privately that evening, we had our first interview with him the next day. About 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we were ushered into a small room with 3 or 4 Indians. Here, I began to see Baba's love unfold tenderly, and here I began to feel my relationship with him deepen. Playfully, he held Elsie's hand, patting her affectionately. Turning to me, he said with mock gravity, quote, "Elsie is weakened physically by age." Then with a radiant smile, he added, quote, "But she is brilliant and hard like a diamond spiritually," end quote. Elsie beamed from ear to ear. Walter was now with him, he said. He had been with Baba at the moment of his death in the United States, in fact. Baba had given him darshan. He was aware that Walter and Elsie had been repeating his name, and that Walter had been blissful at the moment of his death. Everything that Baba said, Elsie had told me prior to the trip. Baba suddenly and unexpectedly turned towards me and pulled me closer to him. I was overcome by this great attention. "What do you want?" he asked in the most gentle manner imaginable. By this time, I could say nothing in his presence and barely got out the word God. He smiled knowingly and patted me tenderly on the back. Then, moving his arm gently in the air, produced a beautiful ring. The question of whether or not I should have come was answered. I witnessed even more of my self-surrender and melt before him. Baba manifested a japamala for an Indian woman, some vibhuti, of course, and then remarked that he would see us in our room shortly. Turning to me, he said, quote, "I will speak to you later about the trip," end quote. I was startled, caught off balance. Could he actually be ready to talk specifics about this trip to the United States? Elsie and her sister Floy were all merriment when they heard. The next day, we stationed ourselves close to the temple about 8 in the morning and waited. Busy with interviews, Baba must have seen some 20 people while we sat there. Finally, he invited about 10 Indians into the room and motioned for Elsie, Floy, and Helene Vreeland, a devotee from Santa Barbara, and myself to follow. He spoke for almost an hour in Telugu without a translator to the Indian people, discoursing on God, higher human values, and the way to peace. Watching him speak in this foreign tongue was almost more beautiful and exciting than hearing him in English. I was transfixed by the intense energy radiating from his body and gestures. He was overflowing with serene, happy love, his gestures and laughter and bliss tangibly filling the room, sculpting broad smiles on our faces. He saw most of the Indian people individually for short interviews, and produced a container of vibhuti for one of the Indian women, and for another, a large gold picture frame about 2 by 3 inches in dimension containing two photographs, one of Shirdi Sai Baba and one of himself. Then, quite unexpectedly, he invited me into a small private hallway. In English, he said, quote, "I know she, Elsie, is very anxious, and I am ready," end quote. "What do you mean, Baba? Do you mean you're coming to America?" Baba said, "Yes, yes, I will come soon, I am ready." "When, Baba?" Quote, "I have prepared a letter with instructions for you to take to Bhagavantam in Bangalore. Work on arrangements with him. There may be a small difficulty with visas, but I am ready to come immediately before my birthday, November 23rd. You will stay here in Puttaparthi, and I will see you once more. Then leave about 5 o'clock in the morning and go directly to Dr. Bhagavantam. Four of us will be going, myself, Gokak, Bhagavantam, and another person." End quote. Baba motioned for Elsie to come into the hallway and repeated what he said to me. We were aglow to think that Sai Baba would soon touch the lives of millions of yearning Americans in person in America. But then followed a series of events which seemed to point out the lesson that Baba continuously teaches. Life is a great game. Play it. We were caught up in a most humorous display of antics, trying to set up what proved to be an extremely evasive trip, trying to keep everything a secret, yet dashing to and fro to travel agents, running about, getting papers notarized, dashing about in the rain and splashing in puddles, appearing, indeed, like characters out of Don Quixote, laughing with and at each other and ourselves. We were very much caught up in a great comic play. This lesson is a hard one for me to learn, for I have been a rather serious fellow most of my life. But in such a comical setting, it struck home solidly. Taking leave of Baba, we went to Bangalore to deliver the letter to Bhagavantam. He was going to see Baba the following day, and it was decided that I would join him. After spending a good deal of energy with the travel agent at the hotel, working through the details of obtaining passports, visas, and tickets, I called Sharon to tell her the good news. The fact that it was 2 a.m. in San Diego was readily brushed aside by my impatience. We had a bad connection, of course, so there I was yelling my head off with everyone in the hotel hearing me, and I'm telling Sharon to keep the news of Baba's plans quiet. Between the static of our global telephone call and her sleep interrupted but not completely dispelled, she's still trying to determine exactly what it is that she's to keep quiet about. By the time we finally got it all straightened out, she was so excited, as I was, but agreed not to tell a soul until plans were concrete. About 10 the next morning, I called Bhagavantam. To my surprise, he informed me that he had reread Baba's letter, and as it made no mention that I should join him on the trip to Puttaparthi, he felt he should go alone. "Very well, I would go to Puttaparthi myself," I replied, "just in case I was needed, and would meet him there." "Fine," he said, "but you'll have to do this on your own, since Baba does not instruct me to bring you." Although disappointed, I understood that Bhagavantam was doing exactly what he should do, responding to the letter of Baba's direction and making sure an over-enthusiastic devotee wouldn't become a nuisance. I rushed around to arrange for a cab. It was quickly decided that Elsie should go along too. In our flurry to get ready, we could still laugh at the comic side of the whole thing. We were the cavalry, trying to cut Bhagavantam off at the pass to save our position. There was no holding Elsie back. She functioned like a field marshal, ordering advances on all fronts. You could almost hear bugle calls ringing over the foothills as we sped away to Puttaparthi. The trip was pleasant, and Elsie had a few hours of sleep in the back seat. As we approached the little town, a mild rain began to fall, and a rainbow appeared in the sky. The air took on the fresh, clean smell that accompanies a light drizzle. The rickety cab continued onto the ashram grounds, where the rain had sent many for cover. As was our custom, we stationed ourselves close to the temple. Elsie sent in a short note. "Baba, I must see you immediately. Urgent. Love, Rani." As I approached the men's seating area by the door of the temple, Bhagavantam was just coming out. He had not yet seen Baba and was also going to wait. I sat for about half an hour, my eyes closed, feeling quite high and spaced out by the drama. All of a sudden, a very sweet fragrance, like that of the plant Baba had given Elsie a few days ago, caught my attention. Opening my eyes quickly, I saw Baba just leaving the temple to approach the gathering outside. The concurrence of the smell with his appearance made me even more ecstatic. The top of my head seemed to float off. Baba walked among the crowd of people, majestic and divine. He spoke to some, distributed vibhuti to others, and invited a few for interviews. With these, he disappeared again into the temple. After half an hour and still another group, he sent for Bhagavantam. Elsie and myself then joined us shortly. At first, he spoke only in Telugu to Bhagavantam, who in turn interpreted for us. It turned out that although Baba was ready to go, Bhagavantam had a speaking engagement in Ghana the 1st of November. And as he was needed to translate, this would mean postponing Baba's trip. In a cheerful, almost whimsical manner, as if playing a part, Baba said, quote, "It's not me. I want to come. It's Bhagavantam," end quote. My feelings crashed in on me. The expanded fantasy of a world tour with Baba, all the glory, fun, and importance my monkey mind had conjured up, was destroyed in an instant. Baba directed, quote, "You will go home now, and between the 1st and 6th of November, we'll get word about the trip from Dr. Bhagavantam when he returns from Ghana. Keep everything a secret," end quote. He said he would stay 7 or 8 days, that he was going in order to fulfill his commitment to the Cowans and would stay with Elsie to bring her happiness. He would be back in India for his birthday, a time of great public celebration at the ashram. Elsie then discussed some business regarding her printing rights to Baba's books in the United States. She was having difficulty obtaining books from India and pointed out that if they were printed in this country, Americans would have readier access to the material. Baba gave his permission and directed her to work out details with the head of his education committee, because he was indeed interested in the dissemination of his books in the United States. He asked about letters from American devotees, and Elsie promised to bring them when she returned. With that, the interview ended, and we decided to return to Bangalore that evening. I was devastated, completely destroyed. I had again allowed myself to get caught up in expectations and fantasies, letting my mind run wild. Although disappointed on an emotional level, I knew by a higher vision that this was as it must be, and in the larger picture, absolutely right. But the negative feelings were so strong that no matter how much I understood and wanted to accept, I was swallowed by them. We were tired on the way back to Bangalore. The ride was long and painful for me. My sense of disappointment made sleep fitful. Only slight comfort came with knowing that in a few days the hurt would heal and I would regain balance. At one point, I fell into a light sleep and was startled by a vivid image of Baba appearing before me. It increased in intensity until I couldn't distinguish between dream and reality. In this strange state of consciousness, I gazed uninterrupted at his brilliant form and was comforted. After a quiet Saturday in Bangalore, Dr. M.B. Sundar Rao, an eye specialist, came to see Elsie the next day. We were pleasantly surprised to find him a very close devotee of Baba, president, in fact, of the Bangalore Central Committee, which is involved in administering activities related to Sai Baba. After checking Elsie's eyes, he explained how Baba's devotees are organized in India. In many cities, there is a central committee composed of about 25 members. This committee meets once a month in different areas of the city or in outlying districts. In Bangalore, there are some 20 local organizations which, as offshoots of the central committee, are responsible for conducting weekly bhajan meetings. They are also responsible for setting up educational programs for children ages 6 to 10 and 10 to 14, and for organizing groups of older teenagers and young adults for service to needy segments of the community. They might help by tutoring slower students or working to solve local health problems. There is one formal evening bhajan meeting a week. Bhajans are sung for about an hour and a half, followed by meditation. An hour-long study group meets on another night. Works from any religion may be read, with a certain portion of time set aside for Baba's writings. Then, once a week at 4:30 in the morning, there are Nama Sankirtana bhajans, with devotees walking through their neighborhoods singing. Another day, mothers gather 10 or 15 children together to read religious stories and transmit Baba's teachings. The texts of all religions are acceptable as long as they have a moral or spiritual message. Once every 3 or 4 months, representatives of the central committees from all over the state meet to share and coordinate new information. Such a system is set up in other states in India as well, and perhaps once a year representatives from all the states meet in an All India conference. After Dr. Sundar Rao's visit, Elsie received a call from Mr. Ratan Lal in Bombay, the head of Baba's Education Committee, and arrangements were made to have all of Baba's books printed in the United States. There are now many publications, biographical material as well as teachings and discourses. Early the next day, Elsie excitedly called my room. "I feel very close to Walter this morning," she said. "I feel that Baba and Walter have paid me a special visit. I've been wide awake since 6 o'clock, just full of energy." Under Elsie's leadership, we had an early breakfast and were on the road by 8:30, our third journey to Puttaparthi in the past 8 days. The driver, a very considerate young man by the name of Lingapao, informed us that he had never driven so frequently to Puttaparthi. once a month or once every 6 months, but this often. And he gave a little chuckle. Elsie, Floy, and I were joined by a travel agent who had assisted us with arrangements for Baba's trip and wanted to get Darshan from him. We made a brief stop for some sweet-smelling flowers for him. There had been a heavy rain the day before, and because of washed-out areas, we had to take a long route to Puta Party. We were quiet in the car so as not to reveal Baba's plans to Mrs. Swami, the travel agent. We arrived at the ashram about noon, had lunch, and took a brief nap. Even though it had rained, the heat in Puta Party was like the extra blanket one suffers under to sweat out a cold. Elsie had me write a note to Baba with her eyebrow pencil on a sheet of scrap paper. Quote, "Baba, I have much to discuss. Love, Ronnie. Room A7. Then we set off to wait by the temple. Baba presented himself much earlier than usual, at 4:15. No sooner had he finished his stroll among the 2,000 or 3,000 people gathered and started back toward the temple than a heavy rain began to fall. He motioned for those present to take shelter in a covered area in front of the temple. People began scurrying for cover, and in the confusion, Elsie was jostled and began to fall. "I was afraid of being trampled," she said later. "Then, in the commotion, I looked up and saw a small brown hand, and there was Baba, smiling, peaceful, and all protected. He supported me and brought me to shelter. I was so thrilled with this sense of protection," she said. At our interview that afternoon, there was present an English-speaking woman in her late 40s who appeared to be from the Middle East. Obviously, in quite a bit of distress, she told Baba that she had 2 children and pleaded with him for help. She felt unloved and unhappy and worried about the care of the children because of a serious physical illness she had. I know, Baba said sympathetically. Quote, "Feeling unloved is not unusual. It's general now in this world. One must be strong," end quote. He spoke about the importance of character, perseverance, and faith. Quote, "Emotions come and go. Pain is the place between 2 pleasures. Pleasure is the place between 2 pains. Transient, always changing. These come and go, like waves in the ocean, like a breeze, and one shouldn't pay much attention to them. Remember, you are the unchanging, infinite, immortal. Everybody is saying, 'I want peace.' Peace is like a letter in an envelope. The I of 'I want peace' is the front part of the envelope, and the want is the back. The peace itself is the letter inside. Throw away the envelope of 'I' and 'want' and keep the precious letter of peace." End quote. He mentioned a number of familiar sayings which took on new and deeper meaning. Gesturing expansively from his heart, he seemed almost to swoon with the bliss he naturally and spontaneously radiated to us. Quote, "Most routes to God are circuitous, like japa, recitation of the name of God with the aid of a japa mala, similar to the use of the rosary, meditation, and bhajans. But the direct path is love. Start the day with love. fill the day with love. End the day with love. This is the way to God. This is the quickest path. End quote. As he said this, he gestured to the suffering woman and to all of us as if he were in heaven now, soaring in space. "But Baba, I'm ill, I hurt," was her response. He nodded softly and gently and said, "I know your left side, it cramps. There are glands there." End quote. She was surprised. "Yes, Baba, glands. Yes, it is cramping hard." I know, he repeated in his soothing voice. "You don't sleep well at night, worrying this way and that. Your insides are in a turmoil. Sometimes you pass blood." "That's right, Baba, that's right." She began to calm and soften with this experience of Baba's apparent omnipresence and omniscience. "Yes, these eyes are X-rays," he said, smiling. He continued to describe her condition, citing specific medical symptoms, which she acknowledged. She kept pleading, asking anxiously whether she would recover. "Surely you will be all right," he answered emphatically. "Don't worry about the body. The body is like a water bubble that disappears. You are the eye that is beyond the body. You are eternal. You will be all right." End quote. "But my children, Baba, my health," she persisted. He produced some vibhuti for her and told her to take a little in water at bedtime for 3 or 4 nights, and she would sleep soundly. Her side would start to get better, and she would be well again. Baba was asked about a woman who had wanted to stay in the ashram but was directed to leave by the manager of the buildings. Baba took this opportunity to speak about the need for proper discipline and to voice his disapproval of hippie-style living. He said, quote, "There are many undisciplined young people who come here who are initially by themselves, but in 3 or 4 days begin to say, 'She is my woman, I am married to her.' That is not good. It is not good here, and it is not good outside. Character, character, that is important. Pleasure without purity is not good. Duty without love is deplorable. Duty with love is good. Love without duty is divine. Love, love, love." He smiled radiantly, pressing the message deep into our souls. It was during this interview that I began to see Baba less as the omnipresent controller of great forces than as a manifestation of pure love. Clearly, his love for his devotees motivates his actions. One might speculate that Baba's purpose in coming to America is to usher in a spiritual awakening in the West, or to help ease the suffering of Americans who are burdened by chaotic political, social, and economic conditions, or perhaps to do something about the tinderbox in the Middle East, or as part of some great design. But when we ask Baba, he smiles sweetly and says only, quote, "I am doing this for Elsie and Walter and to bring happiness. End quote. Just 2 weeks before, Baba had participated in a conference of some 200,000 people. He is constantly visited by people from all over the world, yet he is willing to take such a long trip simply to bring love to one of his devotees, and in so doing, demonstrate his readiness and willingness to extend himself for all devotees. He produced some more vibhuti for us, and Helen Vreeland looked filled to the brim with love for him. "You've given me everything, Baba," she said. Hesitantly, she asked if she could lay her head on his feet. He consented and stood up. Helen knelt, her face filled with a soft, radiant glow, a mist of loving tears in her eyes, and slowly and gently pressed her cheek to Baba's feet. She rested there a moment, her eyes closed, floating in a state of peace from this contact with the divine. Baba stood quietly, smiling, recognizing the genuineness of her feelings and pleased to grant this heartfelt request. Elsie gave Baba letters from American devotees and showed him enlarged photographs of the figure of Christ on the cross, which he had manifested for Dr. Jack Hislop. Talking business, she asked Baba if she could sell the picture and how much she should charge. He smiled, quote, No, I am not interested in the money. Don't talk about money with me. Do your duty. It is your business. Money comes and goes. Morality comes and grows." End quote. Again, such sayings take on a deeper meaning in Baba's presence. It is apparently that he really means it when he says that he is not interested in money and does not want to talk about it, that it is the source of great deal of conflict from which he intends to stay entirely free. At the same time, he understands and accepts its significance in the lives of his devotees. "Walter and I paid you a visit this morning," he said suddenly to Elsie. Yes, at 6 o'clock. I felt so thrilled," she said. "No, 5 minutes to six," he corrected her, smiling lovingly, looking again as if he were outside his body and floating somewhere on the cosmos. He said, "That is called realization, when you feel Baba inside." Turning to the rest of us, he said, "Elsie's heart is pure. Swami loves to see a devotee's heart so filled with love and devotion." The love that Elsie has toward Baba is clearly the central force in her life. Here is an older woman, weakened physically, having difficulty seeing and moving about, yet driven with devotion and love, always moving toward Baba. Elsie did not speak of illness or discomfort throughout the trip. Instead, she urged us on further and faster toward God and toward carrying out our earthly duties and obligations. Baba helped her up. Taking her aside for a private interview, he asked if there was anything she wanted. I heard her say that she was overwhelmed with love, then directed my attention elsewhere so as not to intrude on their privacy. I recalled a friend telling me before I had met Baba, quote, "He is capable of filling your cup till it overflows, until you simply cannot hold more, and still he continues to give," end quote. The sick woman who had been in such distress at the start of the interview, rose to thank Baba. He smiled lovingly at her and began to stir the air with that marvelously acquisitive hand of his. Soon, there it was, a magnificent ring. This was the final touch. Crying, "Thank you, thank you," she fell into a swoon at his feet. The change from her agonizing fear at the beginning of the interview to this intense radiance of devotion and love was so overwhelming that my own heart seemed a reservoir of vicarious and personal joy, and I struggled to keep its gates from bursting. There is so much love in the world. Never had I felt this exquisite experience so deeply. Baba showed me in an instant what years of psychiatry had not, the means for igniting this love. Such deep love is born from the devotional yearning for, the sometimes suffering journey toward the divine. Baba distributed packets of vibhuti from a satchel. He poured handful after handful into Elsie's carrying case until it overflowed. She was, of course, speechless with pleasure. He clasped me by the shoulder and said, quote, "You return with Dr. Bhagavantam the day after tomorrow, and we will discuss plans further. Return to Bangalore with Elsie now." End quote. We took leave of Baba, packed our bags, and drove off. As in all the myths and movies, into the setting sun. The sunset was magnificent, with large, towering clouds streaked and patched in reds and silver, filling the western sky. Evening washed coolly through the open windows of the taxi as Elsie and I settled back into our thoughts and reminiscences of the past few days. Old gnarled trees lined the road. We passed dogs, monkeys, cows, and sheep in the darkening fields which unfolded smoothly before us. I was dazed and amazed, yet in my mind and senses were at their utmost clarity. The Indian evening was a vivid but delicately subtle collage of colors, textures, secrets, sounds. My mind settled into thoughts of love. How intense and beautiful expressions of love can be, and what an important force they are in one's life. How they fill one's life with meaning, giving direction and serving as the basis for our expansion, growth, and identity. Witnessing the play between Baba and Elsie had been profoundly touching and meaningful. Observing my reactions toward Baba has been an invaluable learning experience in the nature of mind and emotions. Even after such high experiences with him, I find that my faith can be easily shaken. And I found that others feel similarly, perhaps, as I've said, due to Baba's Shiva aspect. Experiencing him has a way of bringing out all impurities, a lack of faith, doubt, inconsistencies, to be burned. Apparently, this is part of the journey toward total surrender. The sun was just rising over the temple at Prashanti Nilayam. I had returned from morning darshan and was sitting on the porch collecting my thoughts, not sure how the day would go. Baba had told me to return to the ashram with Dr. Bhagavantam on Thursday. But when I had telephoned Bhagavantam, he informed me that he had heard nothing about this from Baba, and was not expecting to go to Puta Party until Saturday, so the trip was not on as far as he was concerned. This seemed to be another of those famous Baba tricks. I would go on Thursday anyway, though this was a letdown as I was scheduled to leave for the States on Friday. I would have to change my plane reservations and wait. Next morning, I had been up at 4:30 and on the road by 5. A few complications arose, such as a flat tire and a motor that gave out 30 miles from Puta Party, necessitating a change of cabs. But other than that, the ride was pleasant. On arriving at the ashram, some 5 hours later, I learned that the day was a special holiday, Diwali Day, a festival of lights, and Baba would present a special message. Bhagavantam was to translate and would arrive any minute. My spirits lightened, as it was still possible that the three of us would meet and I could still make my plane Friday. About 3 o'clock, I set out for the temple, note in hand, to inform Baba that I was there and available for a talk. Wishful thinking. At about 4 o'clock, everybody gathered at the temple for Baba's discourse. First, two articulate devotees, a prominent judge, and a scholarly educator, spoke briefly about Baba's importance in their lives. Then Baba spoke for about an hour and a half on the meaning of the Diwali festival. The way to bring light into our lives in order to drive out darkness and to identify ourselves with the divine. Although my legs were killing me from sitting cross-legged for 3 hours on the hard tile, I enjoyed the discourses immensely. Afterwards, Baba sang bhajans, and everybody was in high spirits. By that time, however, it was close to 7, and I recognized that it was too late to see him. Oh well, perhaps tomorrow. So, here I was the next day, Friday, with the sun bright and warm, rimming the roof of the temple with a thin edge of gold. I wrote another note to Baba, and walked with some other people to the temple to wait. Hearing that Bhagavantam had already seen Baba and was leaving, and seeing that Baba hadn't even given me a second glance since Elsie's departure, I knew I had little chance of talking to him, but I would wait anyway. I sat for a couple of hours and finally wrote a note saying that my plane was scheduled to leave that day, and I wondered whether Baba wanted to speak to me further, or had I his blessing to take leave. An hour later, someone brought a reply. Baba had nothing more to say regarding his plans, and I could leave. As simple as that. Perhaps Baba had asked me to come back as a way of inviting me to hear his discourses. It had been a treat. In any case, I recognized that he was not going to show me any more outward attention. Maybe I would see him again soon in the United States. After packing, I returned to the area of the temple and from a distance watched Baba walking among the devotees while they sang bhajans to him. I said goodbye silently. The trip home was easy and comfortable. Connections were made like the meshing of fine gears, and I arrived in San Diego at 10 the next evening. The trip had been a marvelous success. I was happy and filled with a great feeling of joy. The chapter ends with two quotations from Satya Sai Baba. First, start the day with love. Fill the day with love. End the day with love. That is the way to God. The second, instead of transforming his home, his village, his state, and his country, and thereby this world into a Prashanti Nilayam, the abode of the peace that passeth understanding, man has made them all arenas for the wild passions of anger, greed, hate, and violence. Instead of making the senses, which are at best very poor guides and informants, his servants, he has made them his masters. He has become the slave of ephemeral beauty, evanescent melody, momentary softness, fragile fragrance, and transient taste. He spends all his energies and the fruits of all his toil for the satisfaction of the trivial and degrading demands of these untamed underlings. Oh, the pity of it! End quotation.